Hi, I'm Fay Claassen. I'm a Dutch jazz singer, and I love to be invited with Robert Miller in his Follow Your Dream podcast.
Everyone has a dream. Robert Miller is a musician who had a dream to become a rock star. He followed his dream and he succeeded. If you're ready to pursue and succeed at your dream, then listen up and get inspired and motivated to take action today. Welcome to the Follow Your Dream podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the award-winning Follow Your Dream podcast with worldwide listeners on every continent in 200 countries. I'm Robert Miller, your host. My guest today is Michael Abene, the brilliant Grammy Award-winning arranger, composer, and keyboard player. For 10 years, he worked with the WDR Radio Big Band of Cologne, Germany. His other big band credits include the Maynard Ferguson Band and the GRP All-Star Big Band. He arranged, conducted, and produced the Grammy-winning Avant Gershwin, and he also arranged and conducted the Grammy-nominated Symphonica featuring Joe Lovano. Some of the individual artists that he has arranged for include Randy Brecker, Mike Stern, John Scofield, Diane Reeves, and Steps Ahead. Ladies and gentlemen, this guy is big time. And in the middle of this episode, Michael and I are going to do what I call a song fest. You know this if you've listened to other episodes. I've asked him to send me a handful of his best works. We'll play a little bit of them. We'll talk about them. You'll get the backstories. And nobody else does this in podcasts. And you also know in every episode, I feature one of my songs underneath the introduction and at the end. I always try to make it relevant somehow to my guest. And in this case, my featured song is my version of Well You Needn't by Thelonious Monk, from my long-lost 1994 debut album, Miles Behind. I chose this because the arrangement we used is very much a big band type of arrangement, just like the kind that Michael creates. So I thought that it worked. So Michael Abene, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the Follow Your Dream podcast, baby.
Well, it's great being here. Thank you, Robert, for asking me, really. And I thank Claassen for giving you my information.
That's right. We all work together in wonderful ways like that. All right. I want to ask you, you're a big band guy, okay? You're the first big band guy that I've had on the podcast. My father, who played trumpet, was a big band guy. He played in big bands his entire life. He tried to get me involved as much as possible with big bands in terms of listening to them and the like. And of course, I listened to Glenn Miller and Benny Goodman and Buddy Rich. How'd you get involved with big bands?
Well, my father was a guitarist, like a Freddie Green kind of guitarist, and he had his own big band. And he also had a lot of the Benny Goodman and Ellington and Basie, and he had some of the classic Louis Armstrong records with Earl Hines. So I was listening to that kind of music when I was a kid, because I'm basically self-taught. And I learned by trial and error method of writing something and being embarrassed and doing it better. But when I decided I really wanted to write, focus on writing as opposed to worrying about playing so much, that I really got listening to all these bands when I was a kid, you know. So it just sort of a natural evolution for me to get into it. I mean, you know, just an enormous amount of big bands I listened to, different styles too, which was really interesting to me.
What is it, do you think, that happened? I mean, the big band sound kind of went out of vogue, okay? And yet people like you have brought it back. I interviewed one other guy on the show who was also a big band arranger, and I'm talking about Fred Lipsius, who arranged for Blood, Sweat, and Tears. He was also self-taught.
Yeah.
What was it that attracted you to the whole big band sound?
Well, again, when I was a kid, really, the sound you're talking about is basically, I think, when so-called swing era ended.
Right.
I mean, there was tons of, never mind the name bands, but there were tons of territory bands, good bands, too. Like when the Basie started with out in Kansas City, there were so many wonderful territory bands. As soon as the swing era ended or slowed down, a lot of those bands disappeared. a lot of the big bands at the time even broke up. Famous ones like Woody Herman broke up in the late 40s. Basie. I think the only band possibly moving ahead was Duke Ellington. And that's because of all the royalties he was getting. He could afford to keep his band going, you know, from the composing, from the songs. Kenton kept this thing going. But a lot of it, I believe he paid for out of his own pocket, too.
Wow.
And Buddy Rich, of course, did a number of things, you know, besides his affiliation with Tommy Dorsey and Harry James. He had a couple of big bands, broke up, started in again. He had a small group, which I played with in 1962.
All right, hold on. I got to stop you. What was it like playing with Buddy Rich?
I had a great time with him. The band was, it was a great business. And we worked in Vegas. I left Maynard's band to do this gig. And then we worked in Vegas with the Thunderbird Hotel, which is not even there anymore. We worked from 2 to 6 in the morning. So you figure, who's going to show up at 2 to 6 in the morning? Then everybody showed up, like Sinatra.
Isn't that amazing? You know, all those guys, they love the big bands. You know, my father played trumpet. I've talked about this on the podcast before. And he was a fanatic about the big bands. And Maynard Ferguson was his favorite trumpet player. This guy could hit notes that only animals could hear. I mean, he was just a remarkable player. Did you play with him too?
Yeah. I joined the band in 1961. I was playing with this trumpet player, Don Ellis, before that.
Uh-huh.
And Don was on Maynard's band. And then the pianist on the band was a guy named Jackie Byard, a wonderful pianist.
Jackie Byard.
Yeah.
You know that I actually played a gig with Jackie Byard back in the day. He used to teach at New England Conservatory in Boston.
That's right. And he and Don recommended me to Maynard. So my first gig with Maynard was a dance gig in Buffalo. The next gig was 3 weeks in Birdland. So it's like, you know, and I was doing working professionally before that, actually. I started like 15 when I was working professionally. So when I got on the band, Maynard's band, I started writing immediately for the band. So I stayed on the band until basically the big band broke up. And then we had a sextet for about 3 years. And then Maynard went to England and then came back with the Big Bop Nouveau thing or the English band at the time.
I want to ask this, though. You said that you're self-taught. I mean, the arranging that you have done, and people are going to hear this when we get into the Songfest portion, but it's not simple stuff. I mean, it's complicated. It's beautiful. How do you teach yourself to do this?
Again, just kind of with a lot of patience. And actually, when I was a kid, I used to buy these classical scores because it was at that, when I was a kid, there was no real heavy jazz books written for arranging at the time. You know, and so John LaPorte sort of took over and really helped me out. I'd bring charts into this rehearsal bands on Long Island as a kid, and my father would drive me because I was too young to drive. And he really established some interesting things for me to listen to and to work on. And then from this high school band, I was on a band called the Newport Youth Band, which was a thing by George Wein and the Newport Jazz Festival. The leader of the band was a high school band director, Marshall Brown.
You know what's so interesting is that those big bands, as you just kind of alluded to, they became a training ground for musicians.
Exactly.
Young musicians got with the band. They learned how to play in that context. They learned how to play that music. And then they kind of went off on their own. It was a wonderful training ground.
Yeah.
All right. Tell me this, though, because you made your mark in many respects in Europe. Okay. And I kind of thought when we got together here that I was going to hear a guy with an Italian accent from Italy, and you're from Brooklyn, which is fine with me because I'm from Queens. But tell me, how did you make the transition to Europe?
Well, I was doing a lot in the States long before I got into Europe from a writing. Then I got involved in writing commercials for television and radio, which was another paid education. You know, so I went directly from Maynard's band into all the studio work. Again, paid education. I get into it, and that's how I learned to get into R&B, some funk. And it was great. Again, I mean, I was like a jazz guy, right? What do I know about commercials? I got into this, and it was great because it was a fun hang, socially great, and musically it was fun because you had all these guys, you know, all these great players doing it.
Hi, everybody. This is Robert Miller, your host. As a musician and composer, I've crossed multiple genres. My early work includes jazz rock instrumentals like Spring Dance. and ballads like Ma Petite Fleur. Later on, I segued into vocal songs like Redemption Road.
But I'll come back strong, trying to stay on Redemption Road. I try to rise, make you surprise, Redemption Road.
And along the way, I added collaborations with world-class musicians like Jim Peterik, Elliot Randall, and Tony Carey on The Fall of Winter.
He said, stand tall to yourself, be true. Don't let the fall of winter get the best of you. Had a voice like a boat from the blue. Don't let the fall of winter make a fool of you. Don't let the fall of winter make a fool of you.
I also pride myself on the reimagined covers I've done, including The In Crowd.
I'm in with the in crowd. I go where the in crowd goes. I'm in with the in crowd. And I know what the in crowd knows. Yeah, yeah.
And then recently, I've come full circle with The Rich Ones, a jazz instrumental with guest artist Randy Brecker. For me, crossing genres helps keep the music fresh. Once again, I want to thank you all for listening to this podcast, and keep on rocking. Okay, I want to go to the Songfest portion of this interview because we got a lot of stuff to listen to. And the first thing that we're playing now underneath me is a Bill Evans sax tune called Bop Stop. So tell me about that one.
Well, I did two projects with Bill with a WDR band with this German producer who I love working with, Joachim Becker, and we're good friends too. And again, we're talking about different kinds of, this is more like a very fusion kind of a piece. And it's fun working on the music, you know, making it interesting for me, for Bill Evans. And we did two recordings together. One was a live one, and this was all in the studio.
Right.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's an upbeat, fun tune for sure. All right, let's go to the second one. This is called Two of One. I think it's an original of yours. It's a straight ahead kind of thing. Tell us about that.
Again, WDR band. Most of the stuff is with the WDR band because I was, like I said, musical director for 10 or 11 years.
All right, hold on a second. Tell everybody what the WDR band is or was.
It is the Westdeutsche Rundfunk. It's based in Cologne, Germany. And the interesting thing, you talk about big bands. There's probably more big bands, radio bands, in Europe, or even self-promoted big bands, than there are here. There's nothing really like that here where you can actually make a living being in these bands.
And what does it mean to be a radio band? Is it that they play on the radio? Is that the idea?
Yeah, the radio station There's a WDR band. There's the NDR, which is Hamburg, Germany. There's the HR, which is Frankfurt, Germany. You know, there's all these bands. There's the Metropole Orchestra in Holland, where they're sponsored by the government, basically.
I see.
And it's a full-time gig. And to get a position in that band, they go through tons of auditions to be picked somebody before they finally choose somebody. And you get paid vacation. You get all kinds of perks as far as medical. My situation, even though I was signed to them for X amount of years, I was still considered freelance. So I was doing other things beside my gig with WDR at the time. But it's something you don't have here. I think the last working steadily big band was the Johnny Carson show.
You're right about that. Doc Severinsen's band, huh?
Yeah. As far as making a living, would have my young arranging students, I would say, what do I do? And I said, well, I think I'll give you some names in Europe to contact, because you have a better chance of getting a real gig, at least X amount of projects a season with some of these bands.
You know, it's ironic, and we've touched upon this before in the podcast, that so many artists, American artists, particularly jazz artists, had to go to Europe and Asia in order to get kind of steady work. Because in the United States, jazz is still kind of an outsider type of genre. About 5% of American music is considered to be in the jazz genre. And yet in Europe and Asia, they pride themselves on that music. Why do you think that is?
I don't know exactly why, but it seems like maybe it's a part of it being the acceptance by the people, acceptance by the higher-ups, like people at these government radio stations. I don't know the truth, but I do know a lot of these guys, like you said, starting going back to the 1940s, a lot of these guys went over there, and I think it's a matter of appreciation. It's like, it's hard to tell, but all I know is when I went over there, I was much more appreciated, basically, than I was here on a day-to-day basis.
I understand completely. All right, let's go to the next one. This is another WDR track, and it's got Faye Flossen singing on Cover Me.
This is really dangerous. Cover me. But worth all the effort.
Tell us about that one.
Well, I've done two or three recordings with Faye. This one was with the WDR Big Band and the Symphony. And this particular track, that's a Björk song, the Iceland singer.
Yes.
Interesting. The original recording was, I think, just a short. It's a short piece. Guitar, maybe some electronics, and Björk. So this piece is all. I had to extend this three-minute piece into like 6 minutes. And it was just a symphony orchestra. It was conducted, I conducted, and Faye was all done live. A very interesting piece. I really had a really blast working on this, you know. And I love working with orchestras anyway. So this is really fun to do, and it was challenging. I had to, you know, basically recomposing some of the piece is what I was doing.
Yes, I can understand. And Faye is an extraordinary singer. I just had her on the podcast, and that's how I got to meet you. So I was very happy that you gave me this song as part of the Songfest here.
No, she's remarkable. We've worked on other things I could send you that we did where she likes vocalese things. So I used to write out vocalese lines that are very tricky when she gets it right away. I mean, she's really a remarkable singer.
Well, by vocalese, do you mean scat singing? Because she gave me a couple of things that where she did the scatting, okay? And that was great.
Scatting, yes, but also written scats. Like, you know, if I wrote a line for Faye, trumpet, and alto.
Really?
And, oh, yeah.
Okay.
One thing I did on Teeth for Two for her. That's quite a remarkable piece.
Fantastic. You know, Ella Fitzgerald was known for her scat singing, and I always liked that. It's just such a talented thing to be able to do that. You know, they use their voice like an instrument, and they're playing and they're improvising. It's fantastic.
That's great.
So I love what she did, and I love what Ella did. And, yeah. And now I learned what did you call it? Scatolese? What
was it? Vocalese.
Vocalese. Okay. Yeah. I've learned a new word. Fantastic. All right, let's go to the next one. This is Duke Ellington's Sound of Love. And you've got Joe Lovano on this. What a fantastic sax player. Tell us about that one.
This is with the WDR Big Band and Symphony. And this was, I think the first project I did with Joe was with the orchestra. I think at the time, this is either one of his only or one of his first full projects with an orchestra. And the thing was interesting was he was signed to Blue Note at the time, which when Bruce Lindvall was still alive and, of course, the president. He says, I'm going to bring it to Blue Note. And he said, you know, Blue Note never releases anything like this, ever. You know, big bands, but that wasn't their thing. So he brings it to Bruce Lindvall. He plays one tune for Bruce. He says, we're putting this out. Which was great because we had Blue Note behind the promotion of it. It was nominated in three categories. We didn't win, but it was nominated. This particular chart, Joe's solo on this, and there's a large ensemble, but we didn't win.
Well, you got nominated. That's what counts.
When you get down to that final five, that's great.
I agree with you on that one.
It's really good. And again, this particular version was done live at the Philharmony Hall in Cologne, a wonderful venue to perform in. And again, live and rehearsed.
All right. The last one we're going to listen to, this one was my favorite because it was in my wheelhouse. Talking about Snapdragon, features Bill Evans, Dave Weckl, Mark Egan. This is a fusion kind of thing. That's the era that I kind of grew up in. Tell us about that. I love this one.
This was the first project we did with Bill. And we wanted to get, you know, Weckl and Mark Egan because they've been playing a lot together. And when we put them together with the horns from the WDR band, boy, Weckl was great with that band. The way he he's one of the great big band drummers, not only small group and fusion and funk, but everything. But Dave has got it all covered, like Steve Gadd does.
Yep.
You know, got it all covered. And it was such a groove doing this project. This is a live recording.
Yes.
And it was fun. It was, again, you know, when you're working with guys like that, and I must mention the WDR band, it's a wonderful band, a wonderful ensemble band, plus a great soloist on that band. So you got yourself covered, and you get spoiled.
Well, listen, you've had such a remarkable career. I love the stuff that you sent me, and I love the fact that you're living in the United States, but you got that whole reputation and all this good stuff going on in Europe as well. You've played with so many great people. Congratulations to you on a wonderful career.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, really. Thank you, Robert.
All right. We're going to listen now to that song of mine that started off the podcast, my version of a Thelonious Monk classic, Well, You Needn't. I want to thank you all for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Follow Your Dream podcast. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast so you don't miss another inspiring episode. You can connect with Robert at robert@followyourdreampodcast.com. And you can hear more from his band at projectgrandslam.com.